This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:46 in the evening. You are with Lynn, Cam and Ayman. And for our next story, firstly, it is Global Tiger Day today, International Tiger Day. And in line with that, we've been seeing a number of announcements coming through about the different things that we're planning to do as one of only 13 countries in the world that are tiger ranging. I think we just needed to talk about it. So for our next story, we're actually looking at efforts that are being undertaken in our country to deal with illegal poaching.
Yeah, so the Inspector General of Police, Datuk Sri Abdul Hamid Badur, announced that a special battalion will be assigned to help Perhatian hunt down poachers and others who are involved in illegal wildlife trade. So Perhatian officers will be trained to use firearms and will be allowed to shoot when needed.
This is something of a continuation of a theme, I think. You know, we've heard from Dr. Xavier Jayakuma before, the Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources, from I think as far back as last year, around this same time, talking about the need to shoot on sight when it comes to poachers. And that is, I mean, when you look it up, he's been kind of consistent about this message. He said it in response to a message in Parliament, a question in Parliament also earlier this year. So this idea of needing to get tough on poachers, of arming people who will be in charge of this. This is something that's been going on for quite some time. And his reference point is often that it worked in countries like India and Nepal to help them kind of double or close to double their tiger population.
Well, and it clearly has worked in India. I mean, we've heard on the news just now that a doubling of tiger population is no small feat.
No.
Do you know which country has the largest tiger population?
I know it's not us.
It is the United States of America.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
wild tigers? Or?
No, not wild.
There we go.
Florida alone has more captive tigers, kept as pets, than the entire wild tiger population. So tigers per se are not in danger of extinction, but they are in danger of extinction in the wild. So we need to look at it as not just tigers, but it's about their habitat. And what the minister is saying, I suppose, is in a way is there's the source of the product, which a lot of people are eyeing for the body parts and what have you for medicine. And it's about trying to deny access to the product. And I think we three, when we've been talking about it, I think we're in agreement that, you know, it's a good thing to find a way of denying access, but there is an impact in doing that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because I, especially when countries like India are referenced as the example of us trying to emulate, but the Kaziranga National Park in India, they did this thing as well where the guards there were allowed to shoot on sight and whatnot, and although it was effective in increasing the rhino population there, it had an adverse effect in terms of the amount of human casualties that occurred, especially among the local communities. Because when they, for example, when they are hunting the poachers, they sometimes accidentally shoot someone from the local community, and some people, the quality of life is diminished when they lose a leg or and whatnot. So there are human costs when you are trying to save the tigers and the animals when you equip people with firearms.
And there have been specific moments, I think, of countries like Africa and India where human rights activists have brought up how indigenous communities are adversely affected given that they live within or close to the forest. Mm. It's an issue of proximity. So we wanted to know if this idea of our shoot when needed approach or policy might potentially have the same effect. So to do that, on the line with us is Kamal Solhaimi Fadzil, lecturer at the Department of Anthropology and Sociology at the University of Malaya. Kamal, thank you for joining us. Are you concerned that this move will affect the indigenous communities here?
So when we talk about militarization or in conservation or green militarization, if I'm not mistaken, that's the term they use. So in Malaysia, this is not really the case, right? This is the first time issues related to conservation and in wildlife conservation, tigers specifically, that you have this recommendation some months ago by the Minister Xavier Minister for Natural Resources who brought up this issue of shoot on site. What was reported yesterday in the papers is not so much a shoot on site, rather arming perhiritan and empowering conservation to be able to defend themselves if faced by aggressive foreign poachers, right? So I think that part of it sounds reasonable enough, except I think by bringing that into the picture, I think we could, you know, we are really in new territory. How it will impact communities is still to be seen in that sense. Huh? But if the minister looks at India and what was it, in Nepal, to say it has been successful in doubling the tiger population, I think we have to also look at other countries where such actions have had adverse effect on the local communities.
And how have illegal poaching activities affected the Orang Asli communities in any way?
Yes, I mean, when you talk to people who live in the communities that are in the forest area that they talk about, they do mention poachers coming in. They do talk about seeing armed poachers in the forest. And yes, it does to some extent. This is a sense of being afraid. But there's also competition between these poachers and the resources that Orang Asli collect as well, like gaharu, you know. And just the presence of armed foreigners in the forest is a bit alarming.
So what are the existing dynamics between indigenous communities, poachers and enforcement officers? And will arming enforcement officers change the dynamic?
Yeah, so this is a tough one because my concern with the news article report yesterday and the minister's comments over the last several months is that while they focus clearly on armed poachers, they don't really clarify what they mean by poaching and who they plan to target with poaching. You know, a lot of Orang Asli who collect the forest goods may not have the right documentation to do so. So licensing, permits. And so this can be problematic in the long run for communities that rely heavily on what they gather from the forest to sell. The law allows them to consume, but not really to sell. So they do need to get the required permits. The problem is in many of these areas, they don't really have alternatives for income generation. And so they turn to exploiting the forest resource. This relationship might change when you up the ante, when you increase the pressure by increasing the presence in these landscapes.
So what are your thoughts on the involvement of the Senoi Prak unit in our conservation efforts?
I mean, it is really good. It was really good to read the report in the papers today that the IGP mentioned the Senoi Prak, and he mentioned that they are in the landscape of their ancestors. This is where the ancestors went about to seek their livelihood, you know. So it's very good that there is recognition, the Senoi Prak, the Orang Aslis, are people from this landscape. I mean, that's a very positive statement. And it is very good that the Senoi Praks are being brought into to help, I guess, mediate or to help assist the forestry, the wildlife department, Perhiritan, with the future task that has been entrusted now. So that's a good thing. And Senoi Prak itself, if you look at the history of the Senoi Prak, it was established by the British to help combat the communists during the Malayan emergency. And it was a highly successful program and strategy, right, in addressing the Malayan emergency. You know, highly successful. The model works. It's just that I think for conservation, we don't just want people who are able to read the lay of the landscape and to fight, but we also want to bring in more awareness about rights, about laws, and about the need to protect these resources for the common good without taking away the livelihood of the immediate community living in that area. So conservation should serve not just this idea of iconic, you know, national iconic wildlife or a national policy, but it should really be in the interest of the smallest people. I mean, they're not smallest, the most vulnerable people as well, the communities living there who are disadvantaged. Yeah? So it's a good idea, but it should expand towards one that has a community service, that's got a bigger role in educating, creating awareness and empowering the local community. It shouldn't be just one of enforcement and regulation.
Are there any other ways that indigenous communities can be involved in combating poaching?
A lot. They can provide information. They can create network of information gathering that can help inform law enforcement so that they can go in and arrest the poachers, or they can go in and dismantle the traps. At the moment, they can play the role of being the eyes and the ears of people in the landscape, but they can play a much more engaged role if they were brought into a special unit. It could be set up in Perhelitan. It could be trained by Senoi Perak, but set up in Perhelitan. One that has got strategic training capacity and firearm capacity. They can use guns and they know how to fight in the forest, but their training should also include our environmental laws as well as other, legal instruments that can help empower them to empower the communities that they work with in the landscape. They can do a lot more than just provide enforcement capacity. They can be part of a community development initiative. And those hired under the Perhelitan, if Perhelitan sets up such a special unit and hired through Perhelitan, this unit can be a specialized unit just like what Senoi Perak was. So a similar unit under Perhelitan, one that is well-trained, highly respected, but with a task that is a bit broader than just enforcement. One that also includes community development, with the idea that in the future, you don't just want enforcement, and you do not just want a unit as enforcement unit. You want to incorporate local communities in protected area management. The end goal of this should be co-management between Indigenous people and the government. Like, it should be a co-management effort. By co-managing, you're empowering them to take ownership over the future of the landscape. But if foreign armed and poachers are the problem, we really have to start asking different questions. How are they coming into the country? Are they breaching the borders in the jungle? Then we have to question. Then this raises other questions. If they're coming by our roads, how are they getting through the immigration checkpoint? How are they getting armed? So all these things raises a different set of questions. There could be also cultural reasons local communities go and poach. Malays who grew up in the forest fringes might find bushmeat something of a cultural identity. And so we must then this community needs to be educated that it's against the law, that they can't hunt at will. There's a law that they have to respect. So there's a need to think through this, to look at the complexity and to understand that poaching is not just about killing tigers, because they have not really clarified what they mean by poaching. So it's collecting daharu poaching, it's collecting rotan poaching, it's collecting soft-shell turtle poaching. These are things that needs to be clearly thought out before we decide to go down this path of arming and, sort of pushing a much more aggressive in trying to combat poaching.
Kamal, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Kamal Solhaimi Fadzil, lecturer at the Department of Anthropology and Sociology at UM. And now we have to hustle along to the 7 o'clock news. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.